Hey, everybody. Welcome to the David Ossington and In the Pocket podcast. Wow, this is the first time I've had to do that in quite a while. Actually, I'm real excited about today's podcast. It's kind of, you know, a new frontier for me. And I have a wonderful guest. I have my good friend and band leader from Smash Palace, Steve Butler. But before I get to Steve, I want to thank Kroger Percussion, Eric Metz. They're dedicated to creating quality handcrafted percussion instruments with superior sound quality and unmatched craftsmanship. And I kid you not, it's really good stuff. I have a couple sets and I have some of their percussion stuff and it's wonderful. Really great. I've used them on a bunch of records and it's really good. Eric Metz, terrific guy. If you mention the In the Pocket podcast, if you add a / ITP, it takes you to a coupon. You get 5% off ordering anything online. So you can't beat that. That's pretty cool. Also, I want to thank our sponsors at the School Rock in Berwyn, Dave Marsh and Rick Allison, two terrific people that run a great program, and my friend Wally Smith. You know Wally Smith there, Steve?
I've heard of him.
Yeah, Wally Smith is a teacher there. I teach over there, and they have a great program, and you know, look them up. They're in Berwyn. Give David a call, and or check up their website. It's a terrific program. So here we go, Steve.
Yo, Dave, here we are.
How are you, man?
I'm good.
Yeah, beautiful day out there, man. And, you know, I'll tell you, man, we played last week, and that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, that was quite a game.
Look out, there's like, you know, we're playing, you know, Smash Palace, been together. I've been playing, I think it's been about seven, 8 years
well,
we've been doing it together,
right? I think you joined
the
band in, you played your first track in 2012, Dave.
Really?
And then you played, we did Live at the Auction House,
yeah,
which is 2013, and then you've did a whole bunch of records since then. So that's, I wasn't kidding around when I said that you were in Smash Palace longer than Ringo was in the Beatles.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah,
you've been in a while.
Yeah. I was actually surprised to hear that, but I'm referring to a show we played in Haddon Heights, at the Haddon Heights Dell.
Yeah, Haddon Heights
At the lake
Dell.
There
yep.
last Wednesday. And it was a lot of fun because, you know, we've gotten together as a band and recorded, and you know, so we scratched that itch, but the fact to get in front of an audience last week was really so liberating, and it kind of felt like, you know, things are getting back to normal after for us, we haven't played in 17 months, so I had a blast. How about you?
It was good. Yeah. I mean, it was a little unnerving.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was one of those things where it was a lot of people I knew because I grew up in Haddon Heights, went to Haddon Heights High School.
You played your first gig there, right?
One of my first gigs. Yeah. I mean, I played there in high school. So, yeah, way, way back.
Right.
So they always had musical events there. They'd have battles of the bands and summer rock fests.
They didn't have a stage like we played on there last week.
No.
A different thing, right?
It was, the original stage was built by the WPA in the 30s. And it was cool looking. It was it was a really great park, but they decided to upgrade, modernize.
Right.
So
it was fun. And I made a lot of friends. New friends through Smash Palace, but now are like old friends because we've been, you just said, like, it's been some years I've been doing it. And it was great seeing people come out, and it was just, it was great. Got a chance to play some of the new stuff from the new record and some of the old stuff. And, you know, I got to tell you, for me, there's a lot of things we could touch on, but I'll tell you, the one thing that was really eye-opening in a lot of ways is that when we did a couple rehearsals and everything that was automatic for me, I was so shocked how things that I never would even think about that I was thinking about. I don't know about you, but it was like, oh, man, you know, so I had to kind of gear up to doing, you know, it really gave me a wake-up call. Okay, so what am I going to do to get in shape to do this? And I still feel like I'm going through the process in some ways.
Well, there's a physical thing of, you know, you're standing up there, you're playing, and you're fronting a rock and roll band, and you're pounding drums back there. It's physical. But then there's all that rote memorization stuff.
Well, for you, playing guitar and singing, I mean, when you know, like I just thought about it, like, what is that like? Because I'm not a singer and I know that muscle. You know, I work with great, you know, other singers, and I know they're always like, that's the big concern. Not so much the playing of the instrument. It's how they're going to perform with their vocals when they haven't done it for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I've been back out playing and doing a lot of solo stuff, but that's a whole different thing than getting up yeah, and playing in a rock and roll band.
Yeah.
Which is, you're kind of singing and you're kind of yelling, usually is where I put it.
Yeah.
So, that was the first thing I'd done. Where I'm fronting a rock and roll band in 17 months, and that was weird. That was like, holy mackerel.
Now you can, holy fuck, you can say that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Holy shit, you know? I mean, look, that was, again, it's great to get out, and I wouldn't have it any other way. The last month has been a little bit of like, yikes, you know?
Sure.
You know, for me, I got to do more swimming. I got to do more walking. And it's all that stuff that goes along with it, you know? But you have to be happy about, you're happy about the new record. I mean, it sounds, you know, to me, I've been listening to it. And when you make a record the way that we did it, and, you know, nowadays when people are making records, you know, they seem to be in their home studios recording. And I like the fact that we got together in a studio and, you know, one at Cliff's place on.
Well, the thing is that we weren't just passing files around. We got in a room and we played as a band and we worked on the arrangements together.
Right.
And I think this is really the first band effort where everybody was involved in writing, some singing, you know, doing all, you know, we really worked it as a band.
Yeah.
And,
But I was kind of, you know, Steve, I mean, that's very cool, but I've always got that from the time that I joined the band, I always felt like that there was a total band feeling, like there, you know, like everybody could express themselves. I guess it takes a while before, you know, the input could come creatively.
Yeah.
But I think that as far as like when we're in the studio, I always felt like, you know, there was an encouragement to say, hey, you know, let you know what we think about.
Absolutely.
It. It's that kind of thing has always been encouraged.
It's a democracy. And I mean, I do that financially with the band. Yeah. I do that creatively. It's like you're all in it together. Everybody's paying dues. It's not one of these things where it's my band, this is what I want you to play. Because, you know, everybody in the band are such good players. I welcome the ideas.
Sure?
And I mean, it's that's a really important part.
Yeah.
So it's working well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's good. You know, I didn't write it down, but we had a conversation this week when I called you from the shore, and I was talking about, and I forget how we got on the topic, but you brought up the fact that there's a lot of musicians in orchestras that take beta blockers.
Yeah, about
that you
half.
Mentioned that, which really blew my mind. Yeah. What did you say, about half?
About half.
Because, you know, I'm not like, you know, I like sports, you know, but
sure.
But I'm not like a big avid golf fan. I started paying attention to golf, and I'm still not, but I started paying attention to it when I started thinking about the mental aspect of a sport, especially golf, when you have a gallery of people of hundreds and maybe thousands. When you're somebody like Tiger Woods and you got to sink a putt, and
I was thinking
what the mental aspect of that is. And then when you mentioned that about performing, because there's a total, and I think maybe I brought it up because I noticed the difference, and I prepare myself for the difference from practicing or doing a session at home to practicing with the band to playing that same part in front of an audience.
Yeah,
because there's
totally
a total different thing going on in your head.
Yeah,
right?
No. Well, people will say to me, oh, you look so relaxed when you're up on stage and you're so easygoing.
Right.
And meanwhile, they have no idea what's going on in my head. So I think a lot of musicians are like me in a way that you're kind of playing at about 70% of your ability because you're trying to stay loose.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you any tension you have in your brain,
right.
you know, you bring to your body physically, where that's other good. People who, you know, I when if I come back in another life, I hope I have that ability to, when you get up on stage, you're at 120%. You're right. doing better than right. you ever did.
Well, that's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. So
the 70% thing is fascinating because, I mean, I think that's what makes you as great as you are because, you know, obviously before I played with you, I was always a fan. And I noticed last week, my friend Joe Moss mentioned he called you the master. I don't know if you read that.
He's
I
so thought, kind
that was
to
very
me.
Cool. He's a great guitar
he,
player.
Yeah, he is.
He mentioned that. And I think that comes along with just experience and knowing. You know what I mean? It's like you said, you're going at 70%. Because if you go at 100, and you know, like I think there's always this thought, okay, we're going to go, you know, I'm giving my best show tonight. But if you're going at 100% when you first get up there, by the time you get to the end of the show, you're like, ah, you know,
yeah.
you're going to have some place to go.
Well, I think it's, right? I think even more than probably what I'm speaking of is the relaxation. So, you know, and like you were talking about sports, using that as an analogy. So it's the same thing with being a musician. You have to be relaxed. You know, the nervousness that you overcome. And a lot of people, you know, deal with that. For me, I practice a lot. I practice every day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a guy that puts in hours of guitar playing every day.
That's
because
great.
I don't want to, I got to stay on my game.
Yeah.
And I love doing it. That, yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. It's not like, oh, I got to go play guitar now.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't wait to play guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a practicer too. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know that. I mean, I just something, and I always find a way, I do a fair amount of teaching, as I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, that one thing I try to incorporate into my teaching is how I can maximize, you know, like you know, I always feel like I'm learning something, even from somebody new.
Sure.
You know, it's like you're learning something. So I try to incorporate that into even my lessons. Like, how do I, you know, it's pretty self-serving, but at the same time, it really helps. It keeps your fingers, your everything moving. I think it's, you know, I've heard, and I've heard it from different musicians, and I'm always surprised. I mean, you know, I've heard them say, well, I haven't picked up my instrument in 3 months. I'm going like, you know, I mean, I couldn't do that. Like, first of all, I would become a madman.
Right, right.
You know, because I'm always kind of thinking about it. And I don't know if that's a curse or a blessing or what, but, you know, it's something that I just do. But I don't know. You know, I just don't want to go up there and, you know, fall on my ass, you know, or just not perform well, you know. And then there's this whole thing of getting older and how you're going to perform. You know, there's a lot of things I'm thinking about these days that I never used to think about.
Yeah, well, you got to take better care of yourself, I think.
You know?
Or maybe we should have taken better care of ourselves from the beginning. But,
right.
you know, it's you can't abuse the tools that you use every day.
Yeah. Well, it's encouraging to hear that you pick up the instrument every day. You know, I knew that, you know, that you do. You know, and an interesting thing that I love about Smash Palace, and it's a lot of, it reminds me a little bit of my relationship with Rob and Eric and the Hooters, how you and your brother Brian work. Because Brian being, you guys are still, you know, he, you know, co-writes a lot of the material with you.
Yeah,
and
he
helps
writes
you
all,
produce.
Yeah, anything. So he writes everything.
Yeah,
with me. Yeah.
You know, and it's been. I think I mentioned to you when we did this record how much I enjoyed having Brian's input in the studio, and he brings just another piece to the puzzle that is like really super cool.
Well, what he brings is that he's the only guy that's not playing.
Right.
So a lot of times when you're involved in your own playing, the tendency is I'm thinking about what I'm doing and you're listening to everybody else, but he has the ability to stand back and listen to the whole band play and then go, well, why don't you try doing this or try doing that? So he's, you know, he's good in that respect. Sometimes he can drive me totally bats too, or can you do this? Can you do that? So I'm like,
right.
Only so much I can do here, Brian.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, he's It's been a pleasure, you know, it really like, you know, working with him and I know we've done some live stuff with Brian and, but I love that what he brings to, you know, what we do, you know, it's, I just love it. You know, it's super cool. I was kind of hoping that he would be there on Wednesday so we could pull him up, but you know.
I was hoping too, and I, yeah. You know, he's an artist. He went to the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts, and he's always gone back and
he's
forth.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, he's gone back and forth between music and art his whole life. So sometimes he would kind of like ditch me and leave me in the lurch and go, I'm getting out of this music thing for a while.
Yeah.
And I go, okay.
Because it can make you crazy.
Yeah. Right? Especially when you have something else that gives you another creative outlet. So he was teaching. So, and I understand he has a class he had to teach, and he said, I can't make the gig.
Right.
So not that I'm sure he'd get up with this anyhow, but it would have been cool because we both went to Haddon Heights High School. We were playing in Haddon Heights.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit like a huge class reunion. I'm looking out and I'm seeing people
for
I haven't
you, yeah,
seen.
Right?
Yeah, people come from New York, Washington, D.C.
From high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah,
that's super cool. Everybody was so nice, and it was just such a beautiful place. I don't know if anybody that's listening to the podcast had a chance to see any of the photos or were there. You know, it was just a beautiful, beautiful place. And if we're going to do a first gig, it was a nice place to to do the gig. You know, so but I want to mention, you know, Greg Maragos is our like newest guy in Smash Palace, and he's been a great addition to the band. He's so enthusiastic, and he's such a great player.
He is an amazing player.
Yeah.
I had no idea. It was funny because Greg, he joined the band in 2017, so he's been in the band now for 4 years. And when we got together to rehearse for the Haddon Heights Dell gig, he comes to rehearsal and he goes, you know, this is only my second rehearsal.
I didn't realize that.
He came.
So he picked up everything. So
the only time we rehearsed with him is he came to audition and we blew down like 20 songs and he played every single one of them without a mistake. And I'm like, holy mackerel.
Yeah.
You know, how does somebody do that? I know I couldn't do that.
Right.
So yeah, his musicianship
is amazing.
Is really, really astounding.
And he pals around with Cliff Hillis.
Cliff, can't say enough.
Yeah. He's just a terrific, he's got a great solo career. He plays in multiple bands. I'm just grateful that he plays with us in Smash Palace and, you know, great songwriter, great voice, great producer. He's terrific. And then Wally Smith, who's been with you for
1978. So it's been a while. Wally's, I don't know if I ever told you, Stina, Wally never officially joined Smash Palace.
We can't really fire him then,
no,
right?
we'll never fire him. It was so funny because I was in Quincy with Wally, and he came to a Smash Palace gig after, you know, we'd been playing around for a bit, and he said, hey, mind if I sit in and play on a song? And I'm like, yeah, sure, man, that'd be great. So he came up and he played and sounded really good. He shows up at another gig and goes, hey, I learned a couple more songs. You might have to get up and play. And I went, yeah, sure. And the next thing you know, he's just showing up to the gigs and playing keyboards. And I went, okay, I guess he's in the band and I'm going to start paying him. And he's
wonderful.
An exceptional musician. Yeah. Really.
Well, devoted. I mean, Wally blows me away because just one, he's got his hands in so many other things, and then he's so devoted to Smash Palace. And he seems like, you know, because I work with him on some other projects, and when he's into it, you know, like he doesn't seem to slack on anything.
No.
It's really remarkable.
Well, you know? he's got a, you know, when you have the musicianship chops and creative parts that he comes up with, I mean, that's rare.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a really, like if you're, not that I'm a sports guy, but if you were using a sports analogy and you had a baseball team, everybody in every position is really, you know, really great.
Thank you. I mean, I think the band is like right now it's fun because there's things that and about regarding the new record, like there's, I was telling my friend Billy Goodman today, I sent him a note thanking him for, you know, that little message he sent us, and my favorite track right now, and records are like, sometimes I have they kind of morph from one song to another, but I Strange Things Happen for me. I think that was one of the earlier things that we recorded.
Yeah, it was.
I like it a lot because just the choices on the chord progression and the way that it just has a, there's, I don't know, there's some elements of later Joe Jackson to it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's a weird hodgepodge of stuff, because I remember, you know, like coming up with the chord progression and the melody and fooling around with it before Brian and I worked on it lyrically. Right. And you're right. Like the A verse reminds me a little bit of a Joe Jackson or Todd Rundgren kind of thing. And then the second part of it, to me, I feel like I'm singing a George Harrison song. Yeah. So it's like, but I love that.
Yeah. Know? Taylor, do you have that by chance queued up? Strange Things Happen. Play a little bit of that. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, that was. I think that might have been the first thing that we tracked on the record.
I think it was. Yeah. I think it was one of the first ones.
Yeah, we cut that at Cliff's place.
Yes, we did.
I mentioned Cliff's studio, and then we also worked at Gradwell, which we all do a session work at from time to time. And I love that room, Dave Dalham. It was fun. So and now. The challenge is getting it out there.
Yes, and right? that always is the challenge. You know, it's whenever you put something out and people, it should be on the radio, and it's like, look.
Have you heard radio lately?
Well, I hear that it has been played on XBN a few times.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you very much, Helen Light.
Thank you, Helen Light. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you're competing with. It's not just. You know, it's weird because sometimes people refer to us as a local band, which we are because we are from the area.
Yeah.
But, you know, we get radio play all over the country. But it's not like you're on a major label, because we've both been on major labels.
Right.
And the way that works is, they make a really nice record for you, and they pay for the studio costs, and they put you out on the road. They hook you up with a tour, which they pay for because you're not making enough money when you first go out to really even...
And then you owe them your life.
Then you owe them your life, right? And they do the radio promotion and everything. So, you know, you have they're sinking tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars into you. But now at this stage of the game, we're on a record label, your record label, by the way.
Well, and thank you very much for participating.
Yes,
I love that.
I love that. Yeah. And, but you're not on a major label, but you have to compete with those people.
Yeah.
So it's tricky, but we do it.
Yeah. And it's, being we have different platforms now. You know, back in the day, it was it was radio, terrestrial radio, and now, there is Deezer, Spotify, iTunes, so many of them. And the challenge is getting on playlists and getting it out there. And I think what's happened with the internet is it's kind of. There's just so much content, so much music out there that it's tough to
music.
Unbelievable.
When I remember when Quincy signed to Columbia Records, Paul Atkinson from the Zombies, who you were
he was already
I remember him saying in 1980, he says, "Do you believe that there's going to be 2,000 records that are going to come out this year?" He goes, "How can anyone possibly listen to 2,000 records?"
And this was back. What?
This is 1980. Wow. So you figure now, there are hundreds of thousands of records that come out. Everybody can put a record out because, back in the day, if you didn't have like somewhere to $50,000 to $100,000, you couldn't make a record. It was so expensive. And now, you can.
Yeah, it's certainly it's a different. it's a different world, you know. You know, when we were coming up as you know, just think about like when we were starting bands back in the day. We sort of had a goalpost. You had like I know for me in my early bands, I was thinking, oh well, you know, we morphed from doing cover songs to trying to write our own songs and then get a deal with. But I didn't really know what that even meant, Steve. It was like, okay, get a deal. And then, but I knew this much, that wherever we were getting a deal, they had money and we didn't.
Right.
You know, I knew that much.
Yeah.
And you need that money. And maybe at the time, you know, these companies all had people that were marketing experts, or they claimed to be marketing experts, and they knew where to put your, you know, what magazines to be in and what writers to know and things like that. And, you know, that was a glorious thing if you were a band that the label loved. And if you weren't a band that the label didn't love, then it was like,
But I mean, the idea of getting a record deal was so rare.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Philadelphia area, even in the heyday of bands getting signed, there's probably still only six bands maybe in the 80s got major label deals.
Right.
I mean, that's not much at all.
Getting people to... I remember early on, like in the late 70s, my bands would always go to New York.
Sure.
It's like we have to do a showcase in New York because nobody, no A&R person would come to Philadelphia. At least I recall that. It was very rare. There was a couple that you would hear about. Like I remember hearing about Paul Fishkin, John Klodner, people like that would come to Philadelphia. But in most cases, if you had a band, and there were so many, later on I found that there were so many really cool bands in the suburbs that, you know, like I didn't really know about, but they would get a bus of people and they would go to New York and then they invite the record person out to see them, the record A&R guy, and hope they would get a deal.
Yeah.
You know, so, but you were mentioning that whole thing in the 80s, you know, you guys got signed. I remember Robert Hazard, I remember there was such a fuss over Robert Hazard. I remember that. And that Hooters had that experience where, and this only happened to me once. We were playing at the Ardmore Music Hall, and somebody from Atlantic Records was there, like a big deal, and I forget his name. And afterwards, the whole band was in a circle meeting the guy, and he said, like, let's make a record. And I remember thinking, like, yeah, let's make a record. Like, I didn't know, you know, like, Rob and Eric were the leaders of the band, you know, are the leaders of the band still. But they you know, they knew, they had a plan, like, I didn't know, you know.
Sure.
And I kind of, you know, I was hoping that it would work out the way it did, and it did. But the whole thought was, you know, Columbia, like you, Columbia down the line. But at the first moment, I think that was mentioned, I think it was probably around 1984 that happened with the Atlantic thing. And I was looking at the guys like they were crazy. Like, why don't we do this? You know, but they had a better plan and it worked out. But
sure.
But that was so rare. You know, Hazard had the people come out. I'm guessing you, with Quincy, you already had a deal. Like, you know, and I like jumped right into Smash Palace. But your history, Steve.
Yeah.
But Quincy, you had like, some great things going on. Hilly from CBGB's was managing you.
He was like, you know, we were talking about the other day. You need someone who's going to be your champion.
Right.
So
yeah.
You know, when Quincy was playing in South Jersey, and we had a hard time getting like Philly gigs. So and the Jersey gigs were okay. But I think we realized that if we were really going to get anything going, we needed to get out of this area. So we went to New York.
You were looked at as a New York band for a long time.
Yeah, people thought of us because that's where we played. That's where we're doing all our gigging. And Hilly saw the band, and he wanted to manage us. And there was like a bidding war over the band.
So
everything just changed overnight, literally.
Yeah.
It was just like he managed us, and all of a sudden we were in another world. But...
because it's relationships with, I mean, that's something I always tell, you know, you got young musicians, I'm always telling them, or people that want to get involved with the business. I said, look, it pays to be, you don't need to be kissing everybody's ass, but it pays to be nice to people because, you know, what's that old saying, you know, you meet them coming down too.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a really important thing, you know, and relationships are really important. And being authentic is really important, you know. I guess if you're a jerk, you're always going to be a jerk, but, you know.
You're an authentic jerk.
You know. That's one thing about my I told you I got new hearing aids. Like it's ringing in my ear right now, and somebody said I'm getting a marketing call. How great is that? See ya.
That's right. My phone's off.
Yeah, but you know that was probably that was an exciting time for all of us. You know, I just remember I was a welcome deer in the headlights. You know, that whole thing, like it just felt like everything was just, you know, going out on tour and doing all the things that come along with getting a deal. I mean, you played with some great bands too. You know,
we all did.
Opened for XTC. Like, did you do some gigs with XTC at CBGB's and like just some amazing stuff, right? Talking Heads.
Yeah, it was really we were in the thick of it when that whole new wave punk thing was happening, and that was the place to be. Just like I'm sure, you know, swinging London in the 60s or LA in 66 and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, these meccas of where all the artistic happenings are going on. So we were fortunate. And actually with Smash Palace, it was the same thing when we put the band together in 83. Brian and I were, you know, just kind of playing the area. We didn't really have much of a following in Philadelphia. A little bit. More in Jersey again.
Yeah.
And
but Philly, I mean, Jersey had some great fans here, too.
Yeah, it's really weird how the Philly-New Jersey thing, it's like East and West Berlin or something. It's like...
people won't cross the bridge.
People won't cross the bridge sometimes in either direction. It's like, man, I'm not going there. It's like, I got to cross water.
Yeah. It's the jug handles, man.
It might be the jug.
It's back in the
maybe
day.
Maybe it's
when
the bridge toll. I don't know what it is.
I don't know, you know.
But Smash Palace went to New York. And again, we played at CBGB's. And it was the first time I had seen Hilly in years because we kind of parted on not so great terms. But
after the Quincy thing.
Yeah. We went back up in 84.
Yeah.
And we were offered a record deal by Epic Records. They offered us a deal. We signed it, and we were in the studio like within a month. It was like the fastest deal they said at the time they'd ever done. And we weren't like interested in, you know, let's see if somebody else is interested. They offered a deal. It was a good deal. We went, let's go.
Yeah. Is that when you worked with Bill Wittman?
Yeah, Bill Wittman.
Which is really kind of, when you think about it,
weird.
We've all worked with Bill, and we watched Bill become like Bill. You know, at the time, I remember, I don't think I knew how great he was, but, you know, he had to earn, you know, like anything else, you have to find your way, you know, your sound. And, you know, you look back some of the early stuff he did and what he does now. You know, he was a remarkable, like, I never even knew what a great musician he was. I just thought he was an engineer.
Do you know he was signed Apple Records?
I heard that, you know.
Yeah.
I know it now, but this is something that I didn't find out for years, you know. Bill was always like a pretty quirky, a brilliant guy, a little quirky, and you know, like if you give him some, like, can I hear that? Yeah, I can do that if you want, you know. But man, you know.
He was really good. I mean, we made the Smash Palace record on Epic, and we recorded it in Toronto. And when we got back, I find that when you're in a big studio, big speakers, you just don't know where you are. Everything's played at ungodly loud volume.
Was that hitting you even back then that it was loud?
Did that,
because I know, I remember listening playback at the record plant, Studio B, and just going, holy shit. I never heard, like, I remember the my hair was blowing.
Yeah, they had these
and I had
giant...
like, hairspray in there, Steve.
We had hair that did
hair
not move
spray,
in the wind.
Baby, you know?
But yeah, so I could never get my bearings. But all I know is when I took, like, the mixes home from the Toronto sessions, I was like, all the parts were there. But so Bill came in and he remixed the record. And not only did he just remix, he recut lots of stuff. We did a lot of guitars.
Borderline, did he do recut that?
Yeah.
He
recut like the bass guitar, my electric guitar. We added some keyboards. So he really kind of pulled it all together and gave it a sound.
I love that band. I got to tell you, I didn't get to see you. I only saw you play years later. I think it was with, it wasn't even Quincy, but Harry was playing drums with you at the time.
Yeah.
It was just such a good,
you were the only Hooter I met. Because you had come out to, we were playing the Tavern.
I wanted to meet you.
Yeah, you were playing the Tavern.
I was really not doing well then, though. I remember meeting Brian. I was really high, and I met Peter Frampton, and I was really. And I was really not doing well, and I was loaded, and Peter Frampton knew, and he just had Siomas, his drummer, who later. You know, passed away, great drummer, who has had a heroin addiction. And my case, I wasn't doing so well. Peter looked at me and shook my hand, and we had a nice chat. But I could tell he knew, like, oh, man, you just got to do something, which I finally did.
Sure.
But I remember seeing you guys, and Brian was so nice to me, and it was cool. I felt like I connected with your band then, you know.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that I ended up playing in the band, but
I know.
Super cool, you know.
Yeah, Brian is a really nice guy. He's a bit of an introvert. So,
but he came, he was the first guy.
But when you talk with him and you got his ear, he's really great.
Yeah.
And but that's a really cool thing about In the Pocket, because I was saying you were the only guy in the Hooters that I'd met. I didn't know really.
All the Hooters were playing with In the Pocket at one time. They've all slowly got out of it. You know,
hey.
It's like Dave's thing. But I love the
Smash Palace is there with you, Dave.
Smash Pocket, baby. Smash, you know, I found that the camaraderie amongst everybody in the Pocket has been the best part of it for me.
Oh, absolutely.
And like, I feel like Ben hit me up the other day, Ben Arnold, and he's like my buddy. You know, like he was asking me about later on, you know, like, hey, what are you doing about that physical pain? You know, like, there's like we kind of commiserate a little bit together, but like, we're everybody's buds. I mean, there's not a person in that band that I can't call one of my best friends. Everybody would do anything for you.
Yeah,
it's cool.
It really is, because I think at the time, when we're in our 20s and we're starting out playing music, it's very competitive.
Competitive.
And you're working your butt off. So it's really hard. You're playing every weekend. It's difficult to get out to see other bands. But in the Pocket, I met all the, you know, Richard Bush from the A's and Tommy Conwell.
Yeah.
You know, the Hooters guys.
Salt of the earth, and these guys.
Yeah.
Really super cool guys.
Just really, really great guys, supportive, and a lot of fun. So kudos to you. You brought us all together, so.
Well, it's been nothing but a joy for me. Looking forward. You killed people that know we recorded over the years. You know, people always said, you know, why don't you record this song or that song? And, you know, the David Bowie history of doing Young Americans at Sigma Sound was a real thing in Philadelphia. He did a Sigma, and it was like anybody knew anything about Bowie at the time knew he was in the city. So I got a lot of emails saying, hey, would you record the track? And it just felt like at the COVID time when we were not, you know, it was just like what we did a couple months ago. It just seemed like it was the right time to do it. And you killed it on. You and Cliff were fantastic. I had Richard Bush on it and Cliff and Steve. And it was just at Wally. And it was just a wonderful. And that the vocal thing that you and Cliff did with Zuzu and Winkle and I think was Kenny in there. I mean, it was incredible.
It was a lot of fun,
you know. So I'm so happy that you are all. You're like, if you can't do a gig, if Steve's tied up, I'm like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? I really need him there, you know. He's just great. So, God, you know, there's so many things that we can yak about. But you know what? Why don't we? You want to play something?
Sure. I got my little travel guitar.
I can tell you, man. This is it, you know, when I had Andy here, like I'm now that I'm like kind of like hosting and kind of okay, we're going this way. It's a new thing for me, man.
I'm gonna tune up.
So tune up. I'm going to say this because Steve usually says it at a gig. He says he tunes up because he cares.
That's right. We tune because we care.
What do you want to do, Steve? You want to?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of songs on this record, but I think we should play the song that you co-wrote with Brian and I.
Ah, that was, and what an honor.
Yeah, but it was great because you sent me a kernel of an idea.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was a hook and a melody for that bit.
Yeah.
And Brian and I at that time.
You turned it into a song.
Yeah. And with COVID, Brian and I wrote it doing on FaceTime.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, wow.
So, you know, you sent me the...
Well, I think it was the next day I got a message from you. You said, hey, man, what you sent me... He said, it's pretty cool. Me and Brian, we rewrote a song with it. I was like, holy crap. I said, great. And then you told me we're going to record it, which was really great. That was
absolutely
great.
Yeah. So it was that thing of, you know, you send an idea and it's in my upside down world. Yeah. And then Brian and I are just going, all right.
How do we make sense out of what the hell he's saying?
We're thinking about the lyrics and we're going, well, what does it look like in an upside down world? And what are you doing? You know, so it's like that whole thing of building lyrics.
But
it was fun. So you want to
That you mentioned the what is the rail system here in Germany? The
high speed line.
That was pretty cool. I said, oh, that's like a real, you know,
the Jersey thing.
Jersey thing.
Okay,
Let's see if I can keep on with you.
We've only played this in the studio, so let me see how it's called In My Upside Down World. You ready?
Yeah, baby.
I'll do the intro.
Yeah, you got it.
In my upside down world, he looks so different to me. In my upside down world, you're really something to see. Walking through the city square, people stop and stare, but we don't care. Breathing in the summer air, reaching up to kiss the sky. In my upside down world, your smile looks like a frown. In my upside down world, I wanna turn it around. Running for the high speed line, it never comes on time, but we don't mind. Gives us time to harmonize. Voices reach up to the sky. Cast aside those needless worries, help is on the way. Mother Nature never hurries, takes us through the day. Walking through the city square, people stop and stare, but we don't care. Breathing in the summer air, reaching up to kiss the sky. In my upside down world, you look so different to me. You really turn me around, girl. It's really something to see. There we go.
We got that one.
Cool. That was awesome.
That's cool. You know, I tell you, you know, when Andy departed the podcast, I was like, you know, can I keep this going? And, you know, it's like a whole new thing doing the hosting thing, but I have so much fun hanging, you know, with you and whoever like the guest is and trying to find out more about, like, you know, because life sometimes everybody's doing their thing, you know, and, it's a nice hang for me.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I just enjoy it. And, you know, I've had a couple of weeks ago, I've been trying to bring some, you know, people in that like people that I've never heard of. And next week I have the great Tommy Price coming in from who played with, Billy Idol and Joan Jett.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. I've been toying with this idea of maybe Kenny co-hosting with me, you know, but Kenny's so tied up doing the Kimmock thing right now, which I was going to do with him for a little while. That kind of didn't work out, but hey,
but
man.
That has its good sides. You're here right now, so
you know, it's funny. It's I've been dealing with that whole you know, the enlightenment of knowing thyself. And sometimes I don't always make the smartest adult decisions about my life, well, about what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And then, like, how I'm, because I get it from Dallin, and I say, Dave, you say yes to everything. And if I can do it, you know, especially when it comes to music, I enjoy myself, and life is short, man, you know, and a lot of times when it's a quality thing, you know, it's hard to say no to it, man. I don't know if you, you know, what you do.
Well, yeah, I do. You know, I get more offers to things that I can possibly do, right. And at some point in the decision making, I have to say to myself, "Is everything else going to suffer?"
Yeah,
which it does.
I mean, there's a
finite amount of energy that you have.
Yeah,
and I'd rather play in the four or five bands.
Yeah.
I'm playing in now three of them with you, and kind of keep it at that.
I hear you. You know, the one thing that, and sometimes you need a person to make a decision for you.
Yes.
Like you know, sometimes it's, you got to get a nudge from someone, and then the enlightenment happens. That you're like, oh my God, like this was suffering, that was suffering. I mean, I literally. I didn't realize it, but I was a bit out of my mind because I was teaching, and you know, I had some other things going on, and it was just suffering. But you know, now it just seems like things are a little bit more manageable for the time being.
Sure.
You know, but the Hooters start up again, in which is a nice, you know, situation to have. But you know, I you know, we talk about it all the time. It would be great to take Smash Palace on the road and do some gigs and.
Yeah,
you know, like out somewhere other than, you know, this area would be great, you know. So, you know, that's always the best part, like that experience last week, just be in front of people and seeing how your new songs. I mean, you know, we played, you know, what blew me away last week is that our set, I think we did two cover songs. Everything was original material, which is really, you know, people I've noticed have a short attention span. And if you can get them to stick around
for that much,
that's really saying something, you know?
I hear you.
You know, especially it's
demanding to listen to a lot of music that you've never heard before, or maybe you've heard occasionally a couple times, but you know, I'm always aware of that. But we played five new songs. A lot of times when people put out a record, they go, okay, here's one or two songs, you know, but I love the old stuff. I don't listen to it. Mm. I live in the present most of the time with the music. As soon as I'm done, I'm like, what's next?
You know, but I feel such a response. You know, like lately I've been kind of like, you got a responsibility, or you did this thing, you got to help get it out. Do what, you know, obviously with my new endeavor, me and John Powell, and trying to do, you know, you want it to have some legs, and yet there, you know, just obvious things you need to do business wise to take care of and make it go. And, you know, because I'm like you, sometimes, like, I've been listening to the record a lot. I go through a couple of days, and then I won't listen to it.
Yeah, see, you know. Well, I listen to it so many times.
Yeah,
I can't listen to it anymore.
I bet. Like, you know, I mentioned the Hooters. Like, there's some songs that I've been doing with those guys for 42 years. And, like, I realized the other day, I'm going, man, I got to start playing to this.
Yeah.
To kind of remember what I did. Because I certainly play different than I did 42 years ago.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, is you have to go back and listen occasionally because you start... I will do things where, like, I'll start changing things. I'll even change lyrics. I'm like, that's not what I'm singing. Yeah. I haven't listened to this in so long. I've created a new monster.
Rob Hyman would say to me, like, after a while, and it just is just kind of the way it works. You go in the studio and record tracks, and sometimes, you know, they write a song and you record it. And then you later on, the song starts more, you know, usually it's the structure of the song stays the same and the meat of the song, but there's little nuances that you start doing in the song that you go, damn, I wish I would have played that part in the song, you know, like he says that all the time. He says that there's some things that, you know, especially in my case, because I'm coming up like just trying to make it have a nice bed, nice feel, you know, so in the pocket, as they say. You know, there's things that happen when you get comfortable. And there's nothing wrong with, like, you know, I think that one thing that I realized last week was when I was talking about the mental aspect, it was like... I tell my students all the time, I say, you better learn how to read music and write notes, because your memory will fail you someday. So I'm you know, writing cheat sheets and, you know, little charts out so I know what I'm doing. Last week was a bit of a challenge, like, but it was such a gas. And I was so pleased afterwards because it sounded great. Like, the sound company did a really good job.
They did. They're excellent. I don't know. A few people asked me, what was the name of that sound company? And I'm like, I don't know. But, boy, they really did a great job because it's rare.
Yeah, sometimes. You know? Yeah. I you know, I'm always surprised when I see you haven't gone down that in-ear route yet. You've been using the monitors, which is pretty amazing that you do that. A lot of guys I know, like you talked to Colin from the Zombies, was saying that he wouldn't.
Yeah, Colin Blunstone was saying, he said to me last year, he said, he goes, I won't play without in-ears. He said, before in-ears, I was yelling, and now I sing.
Yeah.
So, I should look into that. I'm so old school. You know, I memorize all my lyrics.
You're not the only one. A lot of guys, you know? I've been trying to tell, talking with Billy a lot. Billy Goodman, I mentioned him. I said, you should try to try in-ears out because it saves you. I know that I don't think I could be playing those kinds of shows, the big shows, without them. You know, I'm glad I used them.
Yeah, when you're doing big shows,
but it helped me Wednesday too. Yeah, because I could hear Wally on Wednesday. Like a lot of times, if I don't have the ears in, I'm not going to hear them. Yeah. You know, across the stage, there's some things that suffer. You know, but it's been great. To this day, I tell Marty Garcia for Future Sonics that if it wasn't for him, Live Aid would have really sucked because I'm on the left. I'm stage left. I'm on the drums, right? That's where I'd be. And Rob was on the right. I remember, like, I wouldn't have heard a thing. But because I think an hour before the show, I decided I'm going to go in ears. And I hardwired in. And thank goodness I did because it would have been, you know, I didn't hear anything. It could have been really
been horrible.
Rough. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had
no
idea.
So, Steve, not only do you, you know, I want you to talk a little bit about the Rogers Butler thing that you do. Do you mind talking about that?
Because
I think that's such a cool thing you guys do.
Yeah, Edward Rogers is a record label we've both been working with for years, Zip Records. We're both on the same label. And I met him, close to 10 years ago. And he was familiar with my music, and I was familiar with his. And we were doing a gig together at the Cutting Room. And I walked over to him, and I said, wow, you know, I really, really love your music. And I said, you remind me of somebody I'm sure, you know, you've never heard of, but this guy Duncan Brown, who was a huge influence on me musically. And, you know, not many people know who this guy is. And Ed goes, I know him. And I'm like, what?
He knew him personally,
passed away, but Ed knew him.
Right.
And I was like, oh, my gosh. So, like, you know, when you have that common thing. And then we kept saying, we should write together. And so we just decided he would send me lyrics, like reams of lyrics. And then I would just sit there and go, okay, I'm going to take these lyrics and do some editing and make them into, you know, a song. Mm. And we wrote a bunch of songs together and... I guess in 2019 and 2020, we did two records together, and it's been great. It's been a good, great creative outlet for me, and he's really a talented guy.
Yeah,
and I'm playing with the people that I play with up there are people that I knew from the Quincy days, playing in New York City. So they're you know, Sal Maida, who used to be in Roxy Music, plays bass.
Great.
And I've known Sal. I used to be in a band with Sal in the late 80s. So it's like, you know, it's kind of a, you know, and when I walked in the studio to play with Sal, I'm like, Sal, you know, I haven't seen you in like 35 years. He goes, yeah, I know.
He's on that great, one of the covers of Roxy Music. I think the album with Love is the Drug, I think he's on that.
Yeah, I know I knew he did some live
stuff. I love that story. He was on the podcast. He talked about it.
Oh, my God.
How the same day he was asked to audition for Roxy Music, he had an opportunity to audition for Bad Company.
Yeah, they asked me.
I love that story.
He met, the most fantastic part of his story was he was one of his friends who was in the army, who was stationed in England, and he came back and he says, I got Paul McCartney's address. And Sal's like, get out of here. He's from New York.
Yeah.
And so Sal takes the address and he flew to England.
Wow.
And he met Paul McCartney that morning. He had a taxi cab take him to Paul's house. Right. He rang the bell and he waited for hours for Paul to wake up. and he met Paul. And then he went over to Apple Records headquarters, where he met John and George, and he also met Mick and Keith.
Wow.
Now, he's only been in the country now 5 hours.
Oh, my God.
That is the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
But,
how cool is that?
Yeah, well, you know, he was a good bass player, but you know so much about, you know, it's one thing to be a really great player, but, man, you got to put yourself out there. A lot of times you got to create your own luck.
You do.
There's some luck that you don't have no control over. You got to be in the right place in the right time.
You got to get out there. I mean, that's the young people. I tell them, listen, man, you're not going to get famous. You're not going to do anything if you stay in your bedroom. You got to get out there and play, man.
You
even if it's a coffee shop or something, you got to get out and play.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I'm seeing more and more. One thing I from teaching at the school, they do these performances. They have these great performances where they have bands like doing, you know, they have to learn. They're doing cover stuff, but they're doing a writing class right now. It's really cool.
Oh, that's
they're
great.
Writing songs. I heard them come up with some stuff. It's really good. But they have like an AC/DC show. They have this DC show. They have this thing called a millennial metal show, which, man, like, and I'm teaching.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, man, I got these, but I got some kids that are like, they're flying out to YouTube, you know, which is amazing. But, you know, I said, listen, you know, it's one thing to practice in room, play that with another musician that can hear and play with you in time, make it sound like music. That's another story. You know, we both know that's, you know, hey, I want to play something else from the record. Can we play, what do you want to hear from the record?
Why don't we play Then She Disappeared?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm so glad you did.
Yeah, I think it's turned into the single by default.
Crank it up there, Taylor. All right, The Bridge is an odd one. I love that song. I love that. That's really good. Good job on that. That's great. I tell you, you know, there's nothing like, you know, when you're a musician and you get guys bringing in songs that record that are great songs. You know, it just kind of it's another reason to wake up, man.
Sure.
You know, it's good stuff. You know, so I just love it. So. You also do your fair share of like playing solo, and you mentioned about that's like keeping your chops up, going out and playing your gigs.
Yeah, play as much as I can.
What's that?
I play as much as I can
because
it just keeps the chops up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it's a great philosophy. It's a great way to keep yourself going because maybe that's the teacher. I don't know, you know, like over the years, I don't think I've ever been this busy.
Same here. I play more and write more than I ever have in my life.
Yeah. And now that I have the studio at home, I've been doing more stuff, and I want to get better at doing that.
That's so cool.
I mentioned I cut that track with the
Rogers and Butler,
which was so much fun. And
it really was.
The producer was
Don Piper,
who was great.
He's a great
really,
producer.
Really, really,
really, really good guy.
Really great.
Really talented.
You know, that was a lot of fun. You know, I love that scene. That whole New York scene, man. There's a lot of He's a good friend. I think he's a good buddy of Jeffrey Gaines.
He is, because he grew up in Harrisburg.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I just, do you ever play the, do you ever play the Metron?
Yes.
You
used to play there all the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was a venue, man. I was always like, you know, those days, man. And I think about, and you know, played in Philly, you played Dobbs, Ripley's, you did all that stuff.
Sure.
Set, you ever play, oh, hey, I wanted to congratulate you too. I forgot this. The article in the Inquirer was this wonderful article about you and your brother. It was really great. I mean, the history of you guys, and you know, it touched on a lot of stuff. You mentioned some stuff that wasn't so good, and some your history that went on. It was a brilliant piece. You know, it was good. You know, how'd you feel about that?
Kevin Reardon, who wrote the article.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a really great guy. He's been a fan of, you know, the music I've been doing for a long time. And so it was cool. It's weird. This is going to sound a little macabre, but sometimes, like, when you're reading this stuff, you're going, God, I've been doing this so long. Is this a tribute or is it my obituary? No, it's like, I'm like fooling around.
Yeah,
but
no.
It was, you know, you're, it was cool.
Yeah.
And it's good.
I look, man. I'm embracing lately. I don't know. Maybe it's a mistake, but I've been embracing my my age of late. I've been embracing the fact that
we're only like a you month, know, like we're getting only out. Like four weeks apart in age. You know,
right. I'm older than you, right?
No, I'm actually a little older.
Oh my God!
Than you. Yeah. January, February.
Ah, but you know, it is something that I've kind of got into more. Okay, you know, I guess the acceptance is the word, certain things, you know. But, you know, I like the challenge. I have a friend of mine that just was talking to me about some things that happened to him physically that are getting in the way of him being able to play, which is really a drag.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about that, it's like, oh, my God. I you know, and I guess at some point. I guess that's why I'm playing the trumpet, Steve.
Hey,
you know what I'm saying? Just, you know, I got to keep my somewhere in the game, you know? You do, you know? But I couldn't imagine doing anything but playing the drums, you playing the guitar. You know, I feel very lucky and fortunate that Fran Smith brought me into.
Yes, he did. He made the intro.
That
was really good.
And it felt good right from the day we played.
Yep.
I think we were over at the place that his son had, Graham had there. We played together, didn't we? Was that the first place we played?
I thought the first place we played with might have been an In the Pocket session.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
you came in and played. We did Open My Eyes.
Yes.
Wow. And then you did the gig at the XPN thing.
Yeah, that was my first gig with you guys. Nice. The hottest day of my life.
It was really hot.
Oh, my God. I was going to die.
Yeah.
I had to be over 100 degrees with humidity.
Right, and you came and you killed it. It was wonderful. Man, you know, like, we're coming to the end of the podcast, and this is, you made it easy my first one back. I know my sponsors are probably going to kill me because I did it such a poor job on, like, my, you know, reading the... But I'll get better. I promise I'll get better at this. And, you know, but I appreciate everybody's support of the podcast and you know, keep coming back, as they say. And, Steve, is there anything that you want to share? Like, is there anything that you want to promote? Is there anything going on that you'd like to?
Really, other than the record officially is released on the 9th of July.
Okay.
But if people want to get in touch with me through smashpalacemusic.com, I can get some advance copies out to people.
Awesome.
If they're interested in hearing it right away.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll be playing out there live. Come and see us when we do gigs.
Are we allowed to talk about possibly doing vinyl on this at some point?
Yeah, there is vinyl. I mean, the wait for... We're actually going to have like a whole second release.
I love that.
That's
super
summer.
Cool.
But the vinyl is in the process, but it's like... takes months to get vinyl.
Right, it does.
So, but I don't care, you know.
Good.
As long as it comes, it comes, and, you know.
Yeah, as long as we're able to be around when it comes around.
Yeah, no, it'll be great. We'll be fine.
Yikes.
I haven't done vinyl since 1985. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to say c'est la vie, nakamine, and finish, derve. And, Taylor, I want to thank Taylor, our producer.
Thank you, Taylor.
I want to thank Steve Butler for coming and joining me today. And I want to say goodbye. Until next time, from In the Pocket. Goodbye. We'll be right back.